Steve, how are you?
Wonderful.
He's wonderful.
It's a podcast.
It's a podcast. It's not Monday because we're recording on a different day, but it's okay. It's a great day, though, because we got to spend time with Tyler Feldman. He joins us for this week's episode of Stuff Summer Says with
Steve.
With Steve. Tyler is a sports anchor in Austin, Texas. He is somebody I'm proud to call a friend, somebody that has worked his way up from Binghamton through Carolina all the way down to Austin, where he covers pretty much anything and everything sports down there, you know, between high school football, high school basketball, all the way up to Texas football and Texas basketball. So we get into a lot about Tyler's career journey, kind of where he sees the industry heading, everything involved there. So go ahead and take a listen. We'll be back after that. Steve, we are joined today by someone who I think, if he remembers this, because I barely remember this, I think is actually my first podcast co-host back in my Comm Radio days.
But wait, there was a first? Oh, wow.
I don't
remember. This is 3 years in. I'm just finding out about the first.
Oh, man.
I don't remember what the name of it was, but it is my former podcast/Comm Radio co-host, Tyler Feldman, who is now doing much, much more important things as a sports anchor for KVU in Austin, Texas, which is the ABC affiliate down there. Tyler, how are you? Do you remember the name? Because I don't.
I don't. You have certainly shown right now that your memory is much better than mine. I didn't even remember. I kind of now it's gray and fuzzy now because I feel like I was doing so many things when I first joined Comm Radio that I was really just trying to see how much room I had in my schedule to do everything possible. And I do remember doing a couple shows, I think, with you. And I apologize. I'll be the first to apologize.
Okay.
I don't remember the name. But I'm honored to be on this podcast, guys. Darian, and Steve, you guys have crushed it. I've been loving the content.
Thank you. We try. Well, you've been crushing it. You've been doing very well
for
yourself.
That.
What is, for those that don't know your career journey, what is your career journey? I guess maybe more so now, what are you focusing in on with your role with KVU and kind of how did you get there?
So first things first, KVU's in Austin, Texas. As you said, it's 80 degrees here in late February. You can't beat it. It's not State College in late February. We're all you students, if you're watching, you walk to class and you're walking backwards so the wind doesn't just slap you in the face. So Austin's an incredible city. I'm covering Texas high school football, Texas Longhorns, and all their Division I sports across the board. It's specifically football is the big one, of course. And then Austin FC, so pro soccer. And then there's some minor league affiliates. The San Antonio Spurs are nearby, and their G League affiliate plays in Cedar Park, which is about 30 minutes north of Austin. It's technically in our viewing area, of course. And then the Texas Stars, which are the Dallas Stars AHL affiliate. So there's a good mix of everything. And then golf's big in this community. Ben Crenshaw went to Texas and obviously won the Masters. So a lot of good history here in Austin from a sports perspective. Vern Lundquist, he's about to do his 40th and final Masters call on the 16th hole. He went to Austin High School, so I don't think a lot of people know that, but that's a guy who resonates from a national stage and is from the Austin area.
With your career, so you go from Binghamton, correct, to Austin, pretty much direct. That was kind of
Did I miss this up? You skipped three critical years, oh. Darian. During the pandemic, I went from Binghamton, New York. I was at WBNG, which is the CBS affiliate. Carl Ravitch worked there. Bill Pito worked there back in the early 90s. Trey Wingo was in Binghamton at the same time as Bill Pito and Carl Ravitch. So there's some history in the Binghamton area from sports talent perspective and local TV then to national. So I was there for 2 years. Got that job because a couple Penn Staters a couple years older than me were actually working at that station. Caroline Goggin, who's now at 6ABC in Philadelphia, she was the main anchor or weekend anchor at the time and then became the main anchor. She's always been fantastic. And then Brian McSorley, who was a Comm Radio guy, broadcast guy, and they both worked there and reached out to me my senior year. That's how I ended up there. And then after those 2 years, I actually replaced Alex Gilliland TV name Alex Walker. I literally took his job in Greenville, North Carolina at WITN, the NBC affiliate. Not Greenville, South Carolina, Greenville, North Carolina, where East Carolina University is at. So I was there 2 years, pandemic hit, ended up staying an extra year. And then how I ended up in Austin, my sports director, Jeff Jones, who you guys maybe won't know, but he was a sports director in Raleigh when I was in Greenville. So our paths actually crossed. Carolina Hurricanes, Stanley Cup playoff run a couple years. So I would go to Raleigh, which is an hour and 15 minutes from Greenville, and our paths crossed. So I had reached out to Jeff a year prior to getting this gig in Austin, which is now, that's 4 years ago at this point. I've almost been in Austin 3 years, and that's kind of how I streamlined getting this gig in Austin at KVU. So that's the shorthand version. Okay. Good to know people. It just is.
It makes sense. I mean, that's it, you know, networking is important. I know what your day-to-day relatively looks like, but I don't think a lot of people necessarily understand the grind of being a sports anchor. What does that look like? What does it take to get, particularly maybe on a non-Friday night, you know, a Saturday where you've just got to get to the couple basketball games here or there, what does it take to get from point A to point B, with that point B being the television broadcast that I watch at home?
It's a great question, and it's one that I've learned needs probably more explaining for viewers, because I think they all envision there's 50 people back at the station just somehow editing all this video, and all we do is put on a tie, put on a little bit of makeup, look good, comb our hair, and then just read what's written. Now, my job through every stage, it doesn't matter here in Austin, in Greenville, in Binghamton, doesn't matter the size of the city, the size of the market, I'm shooting most of my own stuff. I'm editing most of my own stuff, editing the video, that is. I'm writing everything. You have to be not only a good writer, but a succinct writer, and able to take something that we could talk about here for 30 minutes and squeeze it into a 3 minute, our early 6 o'clock show. We only get 1 minute and 45 seconds. So how can you hit on all these different sports in that small time frame? So writing's critical. But it's across the board, everything. And I've at every station except for Binghamton, but like news anchoring, sports anchoring, I implemented play-by-play broadcasting from a streaming perspective this past year at KVU for high school football and high school basketball, which has been great because I love doing play-by-play. And when you're in local TV, sometimes it's tough to find those freelance opportunities based on a weekend sports anchor schedule. And that means you're anchoring 6 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, depending on if you're East Coast or Central time zone that I'm in now. I'm a social person. A lot of people on TV are social people, but it's how do you figure out how to be the best version of yourself in an environment, a work environment that is, that takes you away from normal social settings when you're in your early 20s, post-college, and early 30s. I turned 30 back in June. So as a social person, I've had to find different ways. Joining a gym, I did a 6 a.m. workout class, and I found a community early in the morning because on Friday nights during football season, it's high school football. We do a 30-minute show. I'm going to two or three games. I'm coming back. I'm co-anchoring with my sports director. Saturday, I'm a weekend sports anchor. So this crossover season's hectic. You got college basketball, you got baseball, you got softball. Austin FC has its first game of the season Saturday. So it's mayhem. It's mayhem on Saturday and then Sunday as well. So when most people are socializing or going out, enjoying the nice weather, I've just decided that I love my job. I know the sacrifices that I'm making to be able to do that job to the best of my ability. And I'm finding different ways to still have that social fix outside of the industry. Did that answer your question?
Yes, I think it did. I think the thing that, at least from my perspective on your field, is that was a big realization to me pretty early on when I started covering high school athletics, particularly, is it's really just you guys doing everything. Like, and I don't think you guys get necessarily enough credit for that. So how do you, so that's the TV broadcast, right? But how do you also supplement all of that? How do you provide the viewer, particularly with social media, how do you kind of supplement that, and how does that fit into your day-to-day workflow?
So we have, at every station I've worked out at, there are social media guidelines. I've never been pressured. I don't think if I didn't post anything, there'd be a conversation. There hasn't been, but the expectation is that on top of your day-to-day of reporting, of anchoring, of writing, of editing, of putting together stories, the expectation is that you engage with people on social media, whether that's X in parentheses, formerly known as Twitter, which I think's hilarious. If you read any sports article now, that's how it's, I don't know if that's the AP of how it needs to be properly addressed, but it just cracks me up, just the verbiage. Facebook, Instagram. I was on TikTok briefly, and then I just got to a point where it's just not me. It's not me. It's not what I'm trying to be. And this is a side point of, through almost 8 years now professionally, post-graduating from Penn State in May of 2016, you got to figure out who you are and what you want to be. And that's not an easy journey in a creative space where you also have to represent yourself, your station, your community. And it's taken me now three markets, but finally I realize what I want to be, what I'm really good at, and I'm not trying to be what I don't want to be and what I don't really excel in. And so I like engaging on Twitter here or there. I post some, like last night, for example, I covered the Texas women's basketball game. I typically try to post the best angle, the best soundbite with some video, where it's not too crazy of an edit post game, but like, we got done talking with the team, both teams, both coaches, at around 10:30 p.m. Central Time. I got back to the station probably around midnight. So I took about an hour and a half to edit something together and post on social. And it's done pretty well. But that's my way of supplementing or just engaging. And the Texas Longhorn community, it's very similar to Penn State Athletics. It's a very passionate fan base. And the Longhorns are a national brand, maybe more so than Penn State. And it does create some great engagement with some of the big time fans that care about that content.
So if you're doing all the same stuff you were doing in terms of work, right? You're doing all that same stuff. What changes from market to market, except the number of people who are seeing you, or what else comes with a bigger market?
That's Steve. That's pretty much it. I think maybe for me going into this career and going into local TV, obviously, like, I would have loved to have started in Austin, but I look back on my journey and it wasn't easy. I always tell people, everyone's heart is valid. Whatever your heart is, whatever sacrifices you have had to make in your life, it's valid. And you don't have to feel guilty about whatever your heart has been. My heart was figuring out how to balance this career that pressures you to basically make it your identity. And the reality is, when you do that, it's hard to, one, have fun doing it, and two, you can get burned out pretty quickly because of the hours and just all the sacrifices of things that you're missing from a family perspective, holidays, weddings, bar bat mitzvahs, christenings, whatever is big on your front. It's tough. You miss some stuff. The challenge for me was in Binghamton, one, getting better, because you watch back and you're like, wow. Now, maybe people thought that I, like, maybe they saw that I had some talent or some here or there that, like, if this guy works at it, he can be pretty good. And it's figuring out how to, one, believe that in yourself during the journey, but also Binghamton's just like Austin. The only difference is Binghamton is not even close to what Austin is. No disrespect to Binghamton. But Austin, to me, is a top five city in the country. Vibrant, good weather, great food. There's always stuff going on, live music capital of the world, good people. And for me, the only difference is eyeballs. You're doing the same stuff, but maybe covering the Binghamton Bearcats or the Binghamton Rumble Ponies, of course, isn't like covering Austin FC, a professional soccer team, or the Texas Longhorns. Certainly the way in which that athletic department does things in the America East versus a Big 12 school moving into the SEC. Operationally, it's different. Obviously, Binghamton doesn't have a college football team. Texas has a big-time college football team. So that stuff changes, but the job itself, shooting, editing, writing, it stays the same, and that's where you get better. You get better, and you figure out what works for you, and you figure out what doesn't.
You mentioned earlier about figuring out who you are and what you want to be. It sounded like you figured out something, but I guess so. Who are you? What do you want to be? Like, what have you figured out?
One, I'm Tyler Feldman. I think I'm funnier than I actually am, and that's okay.
You're pretty funny.
But I've also learned how to control my humor a little bit in a way that's digestible on air, where like I feel like my younger self, I was always trying to force situations and not just let situations come to me. I now look at myself and realize it's what I've always wanted to be, a Chris Fowler, a Jim Nance, where I want to be not necessarily vanilla. I want to have some personality, but I want to be on those big stages, whether it's hosting Reese Davis or doing play-by-play. But to do that, does it really benefit me to be on TikTok? Like, I want to be your, not traditional, but a modern, up-and-coming, young, on-air talent, whether it's play-by-play or studio hosting. That is who I am, and I've accepted that. And it's so easy to compare yourself in this industry. Everyone's on social media. You can see what everyone's doing. And that can be challenging at times. But I'm now at the point where I've overcome kind of me versus that person. And it's just me versus me. And what do I want to be? And that's play-by-play and studio hosting. And you don't have to be – maybe I get to a point where I'm more comfortable in having that space, but – I like what Stephen A. does. He's obviously very good at generating conversation, clicks, which are important. Stations, companies, they look at those clicks. And I don't necessarily care to be that opinion person. I just want to be a good broadcaster. And maybe that's a longer road for me, but I've accepted that.
But your fun still comes through. You talk about your fun, yeah. Right? Well, like yes, that, you still find a way to make that work for you.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Do you think that is the type, and maybe the same question, just a different rephrase, but is that the Tyler Feldman differentiator of your personality? Because, I mean, that's always been, at least, of course, over the course of our friendship, boy, I've enjoyed spending time with you.
Yeah, I do think my personality in person, it's somewhat curtailed on TV just because it needs to be. I'm not saying it's like raunchy humor. I'm just saying, like, if you know me, you know that I'm a straight shooter. I like to just, it's observational humor. That's all it is. It's me observing things that people see, but don't necessarily feel comfortable addressing sometimes. And that's the basis of, I think, my humor. But now through three markets and going through and seeing what maybe works and what doesn't on air, you figure out how to control and be not only a great broadcaster, but still allow your personality to shine through, but not where it's too much, if that makes sense.
That does. One thing I want to ask you in particular, and I think, you know, part of our podcast shtick is old guy, young guy. And in my mind, Steve tunes into the 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock news every night and turns on the 11 o'clock news every night. Now, I don't think he necessarily does that, but
11 o'clock's pretty late.
That's pretty late for Steve.
It's 10 o'clock here in Central Time Zone. So
there you go.
Steve's going to move. I don't do that as much in my generation. So how do you invigorate my generation and kind of the younger generation to make sure that you're getting eyeballs, because that's, in a sense, besides getting the story right, what matters most?
That's the challenge, right? I think that's the big question for local TV, because right now, and we talked about this at some point, but if you look at the top 100 most viewed broadcasts on linear TV over the past year, I'd say 90% of those, 90 out of the 100 broadcasts are NFL games. There's probably 8 college football games sprinkled in. And then there's a couple award shows, whether that's the Oscars or the Grammys. The majority of the marketing, advertising, revenue still comes from linear TV. Look at the Super Bowl. It was what, $7 million for a 30-second spot? And then the challenge is everyone's on their phone. So that's not linear TV. You're streaming. But the advertising revenue generating is not nearly close enough to what linear TV is making versus digital. So that's the challenge, right? It's like, how does local TV specifically be more engaging? Whether it's, we have one reporter at our station, he's crazy good at TikTok and it's his thing. And he's got a bunch of followers and that works for him. And he's figured out that's kind of maybe an avenue for him. But on top of that, he has to do his regular reporting and going live. And the day-to-day of a reporter, a news reporter versus a sports reporter is totally different. I couldn't do the news reporter job. You're going into a meeting, your day could go 18 different directions. There could be breaking news after you actually already have your story done. It's hectic and it's every day. And that's what happens with the burnout, because straight up, the pay's just not good enough for these crazy days, these crazy hours. And that's the challenge for local, is how do you not just get young talent, but how do you keep young talent? And when it comes to how do I attract a younger viewer like you, Darian, that's the challenge. That's where I engage on social media. But these stations, they want more storytelling. They want more opinion, more commentary. And for me, the opinion commentary, I've dabbled here or there depending on the situation. But for me, at this point in my career, I'm not sure that's a good path for me to take, even though it might generate more clicks. And I'm not sure it's something I want to do, quite frankly. And that's the challenge, right? Because I've seen sports anchors in bigger markets have a Sunday commentary, and it's really good. They do a really nice job. Mike Leslie up at WFAA, our sister station in Dallas, he does a commentary pretty frequently, and it blows up on social. So that stuff works, I think, for the younger generation. But what's making money is the newscast. So how do we make you go on the Caveview app to stream the newscast, right? Let me ask you this. How do you get your news right now on a day-to-day basis? And I would say that you're probably in a higher degree of a person who wants that information versus maybe your average Joe.
I mean, I think for me, it's 98% social media, I think. What would yours be, Steve? I'm interested to hear.
My social might be 70-some to see what the headlines are and go somewhere. But if I had a local talent, right? Like if I had a local talent who was telling me stories and doing local things, like not to bash people who aren't here, but the local folks in our region in State College, right? They're picking up and doing national stories. They're doing stuff that's, they got how many high schools where they could find the feature story and then give me some hints about the games that night or a highlight and talk me about whatever. And I think that as the old guy, that's where I think locals miss it, because that's what you have. In Austin, you have really cool stuff that's local, which is even better. But I'm using social 70% of the time to figure out what the headlines are and then dig deeper to someplace that I trust to find it or find more about it. Like the Rodney Terry thing. So two birds with one stone, Tyler, right? There was a little bit of commentary there from you. And then when I saw it happen, I'm like, oh, I know somebody I trust to tell me that story. Let me go look at what he did. So how did that thing play out for you?
This all generates, this is a great conversation. This is why I'm fired up to be on this podcast, because I love the industry and I want it to keep going. And I do think there's a great place in this country for strong local journalism, especially from a local TV standpoint. But the issue being, and I'll get to the Rodney Terry, mm-hmm. but the challenge is, and maybe not an issue, but the challenge is, I think local stations need to get back to hiring people from the region. I've been in Austin 3 years, and just within the past year, I felt like I was a part of the community. I felt ingrained in the community. It doesn't just happen like that. We live in this society where you want things to happen overnight. But even here in Austin, we have reporters right out of college. Like, that's the change in the landscape of this industry. That's a hard hill to climb up and over. I'm glad I was in Binghamton, market 163. I could mess up, and I'm a recovering perfectionist. What I mean is I used to always want everything to be perfect. Well, you realize nothing's perfect. So you just figure out how to make mistakes and learn from those mistakes and get better. But I was making mistakes in Binghamton, not in Austin. So that adds pressure to those young reporters. And if they're not from the area and they're working these odd hours, it's tough to join organizations or find a group of friends outside the industry. Like, I'm coaching youth baseball here now. I joined a gym where, like, I have friends there, like, and you meet people that way. But it almost took me a decade to get to that point where I understood how to connect with the community. It's not easy, especially when you're working a stressful job under harsh conditions, low pay, a lot of responsibilities, and you've got to learn a new place. I think an easy way for some of these local stations to increase viewership is to start hiring people from those areas. That's just my food for thought. Now, with the Rodney Terry stuff, it blew up. I think the Twitter video I posted, X video, got more than 18 million views, which is crazy. But that's
can you set the scene of what it was? So
UCF, this was maybe a month ago, UCF, new Big 12 team, playing at the brand new Moody Center, state-of-the-art basketball. Imagine the BJC, but brand spanking new, all the bells and whistles. You're going to the bathroom and you feel like you need to take your shoes off. You're washing your hands before you go and after because you just want to keep it that clean. It's an incredible facility. Concerts are there. They had the Country Music Awards there. I think they're there again this year. That's just kind of Austin, and it's cool. But UCF was playing Texas men's basketball, and Texas was up 17, I think, in the game, and the Knights came back and won. In the handshake line, before the handshake line, a bunch of the players did horns down, and don't screenshot that. I was just for visuals.
We'll play that part.
Yeah, feel free. But Rodney Terry, who, again, there's so many factors here because Rodney Terry was an assistant for Chris Beard, and then I covered Chris Beard's firing where, like, I waited outside the courthouse during his domestic violence dispute with his now ex-fiance. I don't think they're together anymore. But so Chris Beard, he was a Texas guy. He went there. He coached as a student on the Longhorn basketball staff. He was supposed to reignite the program, bring them back, and he was doing a great job. And then, bang, this all happens. He ends up getting fired. Rodney Terry then takes the Longhorns nearly to the Final Four. They should have beat Miami, but they blew a lead in that Elite Eight game in Kansas City. And CDC, Chris Del Conte, the athletic director, ends up hiring Rodney Terry. The right move. The right move. A dream for Rodney Terry. But Rodney Terry is not the same coach as Chris Beard. Chris Beard is a fantastic coach. Look what he's doing with Ole Miss this season. But Rodney Terry's under a lot of pressure, and the team's not performing the way the expectations were at the start of the season. So they blew that lead to UCF. They lose. He sees the horns downs in the handshake line. Meanwhile, I'm covering the game, so I'm shooting. I have like a 35-pound shoulder mount camera on my shoulder. I always go and I rush to the handshake line, and I'm shooting this. I'm like, man, Rodney, what are you doing? Like, I have to – this is news now because you're yelling and you just said an F-bomb to not effing do that to college kids. Like, now that I'm 30, I realize, like, these are just kids. There's NIL money now. There's all this stuff, and they're 18, 19, 20, 21, in some cases a little bit older than that. But I got the video, I posted it, and then went through the post-game press conference, and it was addressed, and it became this big thing because of a grown man yelling at college kids who, I mean, the horns down, it's just so easy. It's like a peace sign. It's literally that easy. It's literally this easy. And that's why people do it, because Texas, for some reason, gets up in arms about it.
Is it that – I don't want to dive into Texas athletics that much, but is it amongst the fan base that you present your media to, is it that upsetting to them?
No, And that's okay. The funny part, or maybe they were upset that Rodney made it. I think a majority of at least the interactions on social media were, oh, Rodney, why'd you have to do it? And now it's a big thing. And then I don't know if you saw what happened at the BYU game, but they were all putting horns down, and then BYU had to apologize. We don't do that here. It's not that big of a deal. It's just a college student section having fun with a – it's not like it's a middle finger. But some people do see it that way, but I think it's a minority.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. I was just curious about that. For you, you didn't cover Penn State professionally, but you sure as hell treated it that way, I would like to think. What is the biggest difference, or are there any differences between covering Texas? Really, let's focus in on football, but Texas's football program versus Penn State's football program.
It's crazy. I haven't been back to Penn State in 6, 7 years. I mean, the program has changed so much. I mean, they've had how many offensive coordinators since I graduated in 2016?
We do need to discuss that. Let's put a pin on that, because I do want to bring that back up.
Like, I want Penn State football to be I'll say this. I want them to be Ohio State. I want them to be Michigan. And I think they have the ability to be those two teams. But obviously in the last decade, we've seen that that's kind of difficult. And I've, for me, for my own sanity, because I'll say I'm a fan of Penn State because I went there. Like, it's just easier for me to accept what they are. They're right behind Michigan and Ohio State, and that's what they are. And we'll see if that ever changes. Maybe they have one great year. I will say it is interesting because I covered James Franklin in his first year. And having covered Sark from his start at Texas, and to cover Sark year one versus what just happened in year three, that's a guy who has messed up so much in his personal life that I think he just at some point decided to say, you know what, I can either worry about what other people think, or I can just take all of this stuff, all of my mistakes off my chest, and just be me. And so now I think the reason Texas is where they are right now is because Steve Sarkisian was willing to be vulnerable with his mistakes in life, with his drinking problem. I mean, he tells us about the fact that he talks to his team about, here's what I did wrong this year. Here's what I did wrong this year. You don't want to be in that position. And it resonates because, you know what? Young kids mess up a ton, especially when you're at a school like Texas or Penn State, where football players in the program are put on this pedestal, where you're getting in. Now with NIL too, it's totally different. I'd say it's pretty similar, but I will say football in Texas is just, it just tastes different. I don't know how to like describe it. And I know Penn State, I will say this, Texas football home games, they don't come even close to how crazy an environment a Penn State home game is. That's for sure. Texas is kind of known as the wine and cheese club of fan groups. And I see that a little bit, but also when they're doing a big noon kickoff on Fox in September and it's 100 degrees outside and then probably 120 on the turf, it's tough to have everyone just outside. If they have club seating, like those seats aren't going to be full on the outside. It's just a different kind of weather environment.
Okay, I want to go back to the offensive coordinator thing because that unlocked a memory. Tyler Feldman broke the Joe Moorhead story. What do you remember about that situation? Because you had that for like a solid 3 days before anybody else had it.
I look back and just think how stupid this story is, but also, I don't know, if I ever – I've read so many autobiographical books on all these broadcasters, and like maybe that's a chapter because it's just that dumb. And it's just how silly life can be in this industry where, like, you can work the hardest, but someone might know someone that knows someone, and it doesn't matter. I was out on a Thursday, I believe. Probably Pickles, truthfully. Is Pickles still open? Is that one of the few that's still
yes.
standing?
Sure. Yes.
I know there's been a lot of changes downtown. Couple adult beverages. I ended up at that Sheetz on
– That's gone.
The Sheetz is gone?
The downtown Sheetz, it's gone.
Well, this is where that happened. So what's there now?
Nothing yet, I don't think.
They should put a landmark of this whole story. They need to have some sort of bronze plaque.
I was going to say, we could go put one of those in the ground. We should start doing those, Darian.
I can't believe that sheet. That was unbelievable when they opened that. Well, how long did that sheet last?
It just went out of business last year, right? Yeah, last year.
That breaks my heart. That, the Taco Bell, I mean, gosh. Anyway, I'm doing an MTO on the touch screen. I don't remember what I ordered. Buddy of mine, so I'm from Pittsburgh. Buddy of mine who went to a rival high school, he's good friends with one of the better football players in our graduating class in the Pittsburgh area. Well, that guy ended up playing football at Fordham. Well, guess who he played for at Fordham?
I never knew this story. I'm so glad I asked.
Great.
Joe Moorhead. So I'm in line and MTO's like, Tyler, like, guess what? Like, and they all know, like at that point, like I was doing comm radio. Everyone knew what I was doing. And I was interning with Penn State Athletics and comm radio and what, like CCR. They knew I was student media. And like, Tyler, like, got some details for you. And again, like, I'm not, this is like 1:32 in the morning, downtown State College. And I'm like, what? He's like, well, I've heard rumblings. Like, I know the next offensive coordinator is going to be. And I wasn't pushing him. I was just like, well, who's it going to be? He's like, yeah, you know, you remember this guy? Like, he plays for him and he's saying this. I'm like, well, call him and like, let's see. So he called, left a message because it was late. And then the next day, that buddy of mine who I had run into at Sheets got back to me and like showed me a screenshot of like the whole text message. I'm like, now, granted, I don't know. Steve, as a journalism professor, like, did I go through the channels that probably were necessary? I don't know. Like, news breaking, I've realized now, like, it's just, it's not for me. I don't need to be Adam Schefter. I don't need to be that person. It's just, how is that healthy living? There's no balance. You're always needing to be on. But yeah, at that moment, I tweeted it. The tweet's still out there somewhere. It's got like 13 retweets. Like, it's just so funny.
Go find it. I'll go find it.
Of me saying that, like, breaking, like, trying to be real, like, obnoxiously professional as a senior at Penn State. Joe Moorhead, next offensive coordinator. And I remember I had to call on comm radio a men's volleyball match the next day. And some Penn State athletic people were there. And I remember, like, just feeling the tension of, like, them knowing and, like, I had released the information, but I also had a relationship, and I mean, everything's fine. Like, I'm cool with those people. I just remember like, oh, like, should I not have posted this? But
that's great. No, it's good that they acknowledge that they kind of knew it, that it was tense. That's wonderful. No, what do you do? It falls in your lap.
Yeah.
You weren't Adam Schefter. You were just like given a gift. It was like Santa Claus for you there.
Yeah. I forgot about that. All right. Steve, do you have anything else before we wrap up with our
questions? I'm curious. You talked a couple times about, you talked about audiences and who you're serving. Who do you get the most feedback from? Like, do you hear from people at the station? Do you hear from viewers? Like, who gives you feedback? Solicited or unsolicited the most?
I mean, I have a small group of people that I send my stuff to. Like, if I'm putting a reel together, I have a trusted group of people that I know have my best interest in mind. And that's very meaningful to me. Those people know who they are. From a station perspective, I go looking for feedback. Like, I love my sports director. He's just an awesome guy. There was one night my news car, the battery died, and he stopped everything he was doing, met out, jumped my car. I mean, that's just... If there were more Jeff Jones in this industry, I think a lot of people would stick it out a little bit longer and see if it's really meant for them. I think good leadership's hard to find in any industry, especially in the news industry, where it's just, I mean, from a news side, it's just tough. The news that some of those reporters are delivering on a daily basis, it's tough to digest news. That's why I love sports. But I think I have to go searching for most of that feedback, Steve. It's kind of up to you. Like, how badly do you want the feedback? I think we live in a time where I think people are so scared to offend someone that they almost just avoid those tougher conversations. And when it comes to feedback, like, that's challenging because you don't know what that person unless they ask for it. Like, if you go out of your way, it can seem like you're caring, but like, will they get offended? And I think that is a microcosm, not just our industry and what I do from a local standpoint, but across the board. It's hard to find good leaders that are, you know, create an environment where it's comfortable of like, yeah, just say what's on your mind.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
I would also say, just from like a journey standpoint, since I have this platform with you guys today, I think I spent so much time in my early years professionally of reading Vern Lundquist's book, or I don't know, any John Saunders book, or any broadcaster, Colin Cowherd, and trying to say, well, maybe that can be my path. And the reality is, no matter what you do, your path is going to be different, especially in this industry. Because I have Penn State students. I feel like Bob Martin and Mike Plourman put every student in my LinkedIn. And I love it. I love it because I want to help as many people as possible. But they say, well, I want to be like this person. And I think it's good because I said, well, Chris Fowler. And it's good to have those people. But you get to a point where you realize your journey is amazing as it is. You shouldn't try to create the same path, because that'll just never happen. Someone might get a job because of someone they know, or who they're related to, or being in the right places at the right time. Like, you can't predict. Like, what you can control is your path, and it's much better just to be present and enjoy that path, as opposed to, you know, worrying about how to get to the next place.
Makes a lot of sense. No, that's, yeah. All right, are you ready for our what we like to call lightning questions? We really need to name this segment, but are you ready for our quick questions?
That's literally why I said yes to this podcast.
All right, let's see where to start. Favorite go-to creamery ice cream flavor?
That's such a tough question. I will say peanut butter swirl is low-key unbelievable. And what I always tell people, I say, you won't find a better vanilla. But everyone goes there and they want to get all the different crazy flavors. Their vanilla, I think, is the best I've ever had.
This is at least the third time we've heard this on this podcast. The peanut butter swirl also comes up very often. It's like
the texture is just, yeah. It's so perfect.
Yeah, it is.
Feel free to send me some. I know they deliver.
We can do our best. All right. So you are back in State College for one night and one night only. What bar are you walking into?
It's so tough. Like, I probably Champs, just because I didn't get to experience Champs that much. It may be open, and it just seems like an awesome place.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. That's fair. That's fair.
Definitely not. What was that underground? Definitely not that place.
The first?
No. I know that's where you would choose.
Yeah, that's where I always choose.
What was like the club place?
What was that called? It's not that name anymore. It's a different name.
I'd say any.
It's
place
underneath the
that,
corner room, but yeah, not
any place
Zeno's.
But that place. Yeah, any place but that place.
God, we didn't have that duo? Sponsorship pinned down.
All right. Well. And our last one. You are the czar of Penn State sports for one day. What are you changing?
Does Mr. Kraft watch this?
You can say whatever you want. The floor is yours.
I was not ready for that question. And I haven't been back in 7 years.
I know, but you pay attention. I know you pay attention. There's got to be something. You want? I'm not letting you off this podcast without an answer.
I would like to see either, and I know they put they finalized the project to renovate Beaver Stadium, right?
It's going on. Yeah.
Yeah. I was kind of keeping my fingers crossed for a brand new stadium.
All right. That's good. I think that's the first time we've had that answer, but I respect that answer.
I'm all about experience. I think when you have a program that's generating, I know they're doing a ton of stuff, and it was a big deal of who got signed on to do all those renovations. I'm sure it'll be great. It's just crazy to me. Like, I've been to so many other schools that are smaller, that have a nicer press box, for example, or a more, like, I just think Penn State fans, hopefully whatever the renovation is, whenever it's done, Penn State fans will be happy with it, because for how many people that go to those games every fall, and there's history there, but the venue needs to be updated.
Well, and you also have the context of, besides all of the other schools, your school, the main school you cover is Texas, and they just renovated DKR relatively recently. The Moody Center, by every person I've talked to, and you even brought it up today, is out of this world. So you do at least have the context of knowing what's better out there in the world, so to speak.
Yeah, I don't know I haven't looked at the financial sheets. I don't know how much money Texas is spending or how much more money they have than Penn State. And obviously, Austin's the capital. There's a lot of tech. It's a growing city. It's very much not State College. Like, for me, the challenge for Penn State is, how do you recruit to State College now with NIL? Because if you spend one day, one weekend in Austin, you understand right off the bat why someone would want to come here rather than Penn State. Like, to me, it's pretty simple, because Austin, and I didn't realize this when Vince Young was winning a national championship at the Rose Bowl 15 plus years ago, but I thought Texas was Texas, like tumbleweed, Cal. Austin is not Texas at all. It's a thriving city with major growth. And I'm not saying that's not what State College is, but there's a big difference there. And I think you see in the venues, obviously Pagola is really nice and brand new, but Moody's brand new. Texas is building a brand new practice facility for football, brand new. They're tearing down a building. They built brand new basketball practice facility right next to the Moody Center. It's not even connected. It's a walk across the street, but they're certainly spending on all that stuff that I think, one, elevates the student athletes' play, but also elevates the experience and helps with recruiting. So I think from a brick and mortar standpoint, that's probably where Penn State needs to focus, on top of the NIL stuff to compete with Michigan and Ohio State.
Makes sense. All right, your time to plug. What would you like to plug? We don't have that many Austin area viewers, but
we may.
Yeah,
know.
This phrasing may not be appropriate, but I'm not a big plugger.
Okay, that's fine.
I'll just thank you guys for being good friends and good people. Nah, they can. If they want to find it, they'll find it.
Okay.
It's, if I say it, they're like, "What did he say? Feld? How do you spell that?" They can find it. Not a big plugger.
Okay.
You guys want to plug anything while we're on?
No.
You haven't talked about.
This was great. I'm glad we finally did this.
I'll plug at PSU Poorman on Twitter. I'm waiting for him to text me, because obviously the Knits with a huge upset win at Rec Hall. And he tweeted video that, you know, he got like maybe 200 retweets, and that's big for PSU Poorman.
He was very proud of the number of people that saw that video.
Have you seen him? Has he said anything to you?
Oh yeah, he's very proud of the number of people that saw that video.
Yeah, I see. We're plugging PSU Poorman. That's who we're plugging.
This podcast is off the rails. This is exactly the way I thought an interview with Tyler Feldman would go. I appreciate it, though.
You know, Mike usually doesn't last this long, so he might not even get to this point of the podcast. How many minutes are we in?
47.
No, we'll have to pull it out and send him a second.
Yeah, we will get this.
This will be the tease video on the socials.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, thank you for joining us, Tyler. We really appreciate it.
We are. Appreciate you having me.
Steve, I think the thing that stood out to me about Tyler is he sees the big picture in the industry, right? And he has done a nice job with assessing where he wants to go next and how to get there. And I think he didn't give himself enough credit for how talented he is, because that is what has made him ascend the ranks so quickly, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think what Tyler does well, and the stuff I've seen, is he's polished, he's informed, he's right. You know, it takes you a while to get to know a market, but I think in kind of watching him through all the markets from afar, he does a good job trying to get engaged, knowing his people, knowing he's there. He works hard. He's good. So it was great to hear from him talking about what he does and where he sees the industry going.
Do you think 20 years from now, local news, TV news has the impact that it had maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago? Because I feel like it's dropped off a little bit, at least my lifetime.
Oh, yeah, certainly in your lifetime. I mean, it's just gotten less and less relevant, unfortunately, right? Because, you know, even weather, it's usually weather that drives local news often. I think it's going to be less relevant. I think that's a shame. I think part of the answer for local news, and he's right about there being the money in it on the TV side of it, at least in most places. I think the secret for the sports stuff is to be more local. Like I get Altoona Johnstown TV stuff. I would care more about some high school kid they did a feature on as whatever leading into the sports that week than giving me Pittsburgh stuff that I know that they think is cool to cover. I don't care. I can get Pittsburgh stuff somewhere else. I think local news has to be local for it to work. And maybe that didn't work for newspapers, so maybe it won't work for TV, but I think that's what TV's future is.
It's funny to hear you say that, and because I think about that living in that market and then moving to the DC market. And I feel like in the DC market, particularly like in Austin, you do get this a little bit, but you don't really get that mix of bigger sports and local sports. It's pretty much just the bigger sports down here. And, you know, DC is a top five market, top 10 market. So it is certainly different than even Austin. But I think the thing that I think about and why I do think it's important, I don't know if it'll necessarily stay around the way newspapers are a good example of this, is kind of what Tyler was talking about. But, you know, just the importance of telling the high school stories, because that provides the sense of community really more so than Tyler covering the Texas Stars. It is a little bit different with really Texas Longhorns and that aspect. That's very similar to State College, because that both down there as I understand the Austin market is and isn't the draw. But I don't know. I always think about that, like I think I've told this before, but like when I was at the Mirror and I was doing like the little sports stories of like the games from around the region that night, like it was a goal to cram as many names in as possible, because that was what sold stuff. And I think that's also informative. And I think that's why those places have been really better or longer lasting, or I don't know what the word I'm looking for here is more impactful than here in DC, where it's CNN Junior in a lot of ways.
So do you have other stuff where you wouldn't care, maybe because you don't have kids yet? Local stuff. When you want local stuff, where do you get that from?
The newspapers. So between the Frederick newspaper primarily,
some kind of weekly or something.
We have a daily. We have a daily, except they don't print on Saturdays.
Yeah, the Frederick News Post. I just didn't know if there was another one in addition.
There's that one outlet, and then we get like there's a Hagerstown outlet too, but those kind of, since where we're at in the county, it kind of intermixes a little bit. Most of it's through that, but then I think the other thing that, like, and we could talk about this at some point later on, is Facebook has become a big like driver for the Frederick Facebook group is how we get most of our actual news that this business is coming, right? Like that's bigger for us. If I want to read what happened about at the Frederick High School football game, then I go read the news post.
No, I'm proud for him with the gym stuff, with coaching baseball. I think it's great. He's involved in the community. Yeah. And I think that makes him better at his job too. So I think he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, no, I think that's the main thing about Tyler. Like I don't think we will be seeing the last of Tyler in terms of his next steps, because I think he's going to big places. I really do, and I'm not just saying that because he's a friend. He has had that knack and that little twinkle in his eye pretty much from day one of knowing him. Yep. All right. Well, thank you to Tyler for joining us. That wraps up this week's show, a little bit of a lighter show since we had a little bit longer of an episode. But I want to say thank you to Tyler. And we're going to plug our stuff since he's not going to let us plug anything, or he's not going to plug anything. We're going to plug our stuff, which is our website called StuffSummerSays.com. On that website, we've got a section called With Steve. And then we've also got emails. Mine's Darian at StuffSummerSays.com. Steve's is
Steve at StuffSummerSays.com.
If you're listening, you can thumbs up 5 stars. If you are watching, you can subscribe somewhere in that general vicinity. I don't know, somewhere down there. And other than that, we've got Twitter handles. Mine's at StuffSummerSays. Steve's is
at Steve Samsel.
That's about it. See ya.